Hello and welcome to the Rain of Blood podcast, brought to you by the Rain of Blood Festival team. So this is the podcast where you get a behind-the-scenes look at the con and the Sharps and Blood Kingsters all over the world who will be celebrating with us. So this podcast is intended for mature audiences who have an interest in, well, blood and Sharps-based kinks only. So if that's not you, then this podcast definitely is not for you. So these are real stories from real kinksters, and so they may contain discussions surrounding things like health, mental health, kink, blood, self-harm, traumatic experiences, and more. So if you're having a rough day or these topics could be distressing for you, then we would advise you to come back when you're more ready to enjoy the topic with us. Welcome, listeners. All the way from Kentucky today, I have a little bit of a treat for you all. I am certainly biased about today's guest. I have brought in one of my dear play partners and one of my primary play partners. She goes by Raja. I'm super excited to have her here today. So do you mind introducing yourself a little bit to listeners?
Hi, I'm Raja, as Ember said, all the way from the United States in Kentucky. I'm 24 years old and super ready to learn more about kink. And that's why I'm here today.
I love it. And I just love chatting with you. I know this is a little bit different of a context than we're used to. I know.
Yes.
We're pretty informal with each other. We've known each other for a couple of years now. So I think this is going to change a little from the usual chats that I have. I think maybe we can give some folks some context to our relationship. Do you want to describe kind of how you came to meet me and Soren, how you started in kink?
Yes. So I met Soren and Ember literally by chance if my best friends weren't late to a kink event that was local. I was watching Ember do wax play demonstrations. I was like, I've never done a demo. We should do it. We haven't. Wax has been on our list for a minute. Let's do wax. So I got up on the table. We did our demo. Found that Ember and Soren were primals. I was like, oh, I've been looking for one for forever. It's a high level of attraction as well.
For sure. I know there was a lot of concerns, at least on my part, coming from the fact that me and Soren are married. We are together, and there is this difference in power there. When you originally approached us with the idea of becoming play partners, it was something that I really had to consider because of the, or what I felt was potential ethical concerns of displacement of power, really come to know and enjoy having you in our life. You've been a joy to play with. Even if you do break toys every now and again.
Hey, I didn't know the very first time. Nobody told me. It just happened.
So you've been a little bit of a Sharps interestee from basically the get-go. I think one of the first things that we really started trying and working with was knives and some blood impact.
Yes, you have this hunting knife that you use to scrape off with wax. And I think that was like my first, I was like, oh. Like, it's sharp. Sharps are different because, like, you know, primal nails biting. Like, yes, that's all good. But there's something about, it's also fear, too. Like, if you're blindfolded and your partner has this knife, you know, anything could happen. You're tied down, anything. It's just, it gives me chills.
Evil chills. I love it.
Yeah.
you are also a really, really heavy impact bottom. You're one of the heaviest impact bottoms that I've ever topped for, which is saying something.
I've never, like, you and Daddy are the ones who definitely, like, shaped the beginning of that. Because, you know, before I met you guys and whatnot, I would have, like, you know, rope, handcuffs, 18-year-old sex stores can't really get in, you know, trying to build something out of nothing with no, like, guidance, because it takes time. And so it was, my king journey really started when I met you guys.
Which brings its own challenges. And I think there's some benefits to that as well. I know, I mean, our local kink community pretty much is working on bare bones. There's not a whole lot of options.
Especially swinger dominated too.
And I think there's a lot of stigma surrounding blood play and sharps play around here. So I think it's for sure something that most folks don't tend to understand well. So, I mean, given that, I know you probably hadn't been exposed to a whole lot of sharps play ahead of time. What made you decide to take the jump in and start exploring sharps with me?
I saw one of our friends, I think. The more I saw one of our friends at a couple play parties that were playing new sharps, I was like, huh, I wonder. But also trying to get over a fear as well, because I was never a big needle person growing up. So just wanted to see, because I have tattoos, so I'm trying to figure out what the difference between a tattoo needle and then a sharps needle and then shots and figuring it out. But I enjoy it, especially if it doesn't even have to be just sharps play. I like incorporating sharps into my heavy impact scenes as well.
You are,
That's a double. Yeah.
You are a big fan of Curry Combs in particular.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that. Oh, I love Curry Combs. I love the, I don't bruise easy, but the Curry Comb, the first time we did the Curry Comb, the scars from the teeth lasted for about 6 to 7 months before we did any heavy Curry Comb impact again. Then I was like, oh, I want more.
I think you call them your Wi-Fi marks.
Yeah, they're my Wi-Fi symbols.
I love it. They were so cute on you. But there have been some adjustments that we've had to make for your skin. I mean,
definitely.
It's one of those things where, for me, being a non-melanated person, I'm accustomed to skin that reacts a certain kind of way, has certain indicators or markings. So that's been a little bit of an adjustment for me of figuring out and watching how your skin reacts and how it changes differently. So, like, your lack of bruising, which... granted, I've worked with a lot of people who don't bruise a lot. In the past, I myself haven't bruised a lot, so that's different now. But do you mind speaking a little bit to that? I know I wouldn't say that it's been a frustration for you that you haven't been able to bruise, but it's definitely been one of those, like...
Yes and no, because when I want marks, I want marks. Kind of thing, that bratty, stubborn zodiac sign of mine. When I want something and I ask for it, I expect it to be there. But it's not a fault of yours, or it's just the way my skin is. We can't be mad about it. But I'm able to, I can't have marks on my butt, but we can figure it out on my thighs. Or like, I had a really big mark on the back of my thigh. Like, daddy bit me hard. And that was nice. So, but also skin, we've approached my skin differently from before my diagnosis and after my diagnosis.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, because I started sharps before my diagnosis. Mm-hmm. When I did those three needles on my thigh. And then we did the party and the cutting scene.
Which has led to a really big shift in how we approach sharps. Raja identifies as a person who is immunosuppressed and has a fairly serious health condition that we've been managing or helping to manage for the last year or so. And it's really changed a lot of the way that we approach sharps. But I know it's been a source of probably frustration for you and definitely fear for me. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that transitions look like?
So my immunosuppressed condition is I was diagnosed with RRMS, which is relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis. And a breakdown, it is a condition that attacks the protective covering of our nerves. And so one synapsis does not get the full electric message to the other one. So mainly it affected my mobility. And so that was hard just for placement of scenes, not even sharps itself, but placements of scenes. Because like in the beginning, it was really hard before therapy for us. So with sharps, we just had to take, like, we were already precautious before because it's blood and it's sharps and, you know, anything can get infected with our healthcare hyperfixated minds, right? And so it was a lot of, what is it? Sanitizing and making sure that there was no, like, 2-3 days, make sure that it still looks the same, that it looks like it's healing. If not, then we need to go to PCP. But also, we've always done small things. We haven't done anything super, super big with sharps either. I think the biggest thing we've ever done is the curry comb. That was like the largest toy sharp was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because there's been like a lot of adjustment. And I know part of it stems from a lot of my fears.
Yeah.
Because you are someone that I care about a lot. And while I know that you need and want this as well, there's definitely some fear and hesitancy for me because I know the risks that you're taking with it. I think one of the things that's always in the back of my mind, as I've gone to some of your doctor's appointments with you and seen firsthand how some of them approach you in maybe a less than ideal way, to put it nicely, there's always the, well, what if I'm doing something that ends up going badly? And then I'm going to end up exposing you to the stigma or bias, compounded bias that you face within the healthcare system already.
Right. And that's why we changed my neurologist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which has been helpful. Finding doctors that have been supportive of what you want to do with things has been immensely beneficial, I think.
Oh, definitely. Compared to my diagnosis in 2022, and then I started, the biggest thing that really changed was the pelvic floor therapy. After, I never, like, we've discussed about pelvic floor therapy and whether it's kink related, vanilla related, your pelvic floor matters. And And I've been walking so much better. So much better.
You've really had a lot of great strides in improving and getting stronger with it. And I think that overall dedication and working toward that self-care and health has really helped when we've approached these sharps and things.
Definitely.
And now, granted, we still don't do a whole lot of sharps at this point together. And again, I mean, some of that has been just time and place. About my parents currently living with me, holidays and things. But I think if I'm gonna be entirely honest, there is part of me that still is concerned or has some fears surrounding your health conditions and doing sharps because of those risk factors.
But also with sharps too, they're like a rare craving as well too. But when I do get that craving, it's a really intense craving, if that makes sense.
Do you mind describing it a little bit more? How do you know when you're craving sharps?
I feel like it links into my primal headspace too, that I think it's the roughness that I crave, really. The just all inhibitions gone, no worries, just if you get marks on your body, you get marks on your body. And so but also with the primal thing too, with me accidentally, hear that people, accidentally injuring my partner. Sharps has also compensated for that as well.
Because you're a little bit of a handful.
You said get away. I got away. Okay. I got away. So, yeah.
And you are definitely someone who thrives in kind of more caregiving and service roles, I think. You've helped me out with some sharp scenes for sure. And you're always that person who's kind of right behind me at my shoulder, making sure I don't overdo myself on any given night, and helping to steady me and being part of that. And that's also a connection that I really enjoy sharing with you, is being able to have you, I don't know, hand me needles, be part of the whole process there. It's connecting in a different way than having you as a bottom is.
Yes, it's a really big love language for me. I mean, I grew up that way, you know, taking care of people, but I do enjoy the relief that it gives somebody. They thought about me. I don't have to do it myself.
I'm usually a big stickler about preparing for scenes. Do you want to walk people through a little bit of what that can look like for you?
So from every last little get together that we do with our friends, we'll talk about planning it. And then the week leading up to it, it'll be about 3 days. And we'll schedule and make sure that everybody lines up. And once we have a set date and a set time, I take that entire day and I'm like, okay, I'm not doing anything. I do my hair if I feel like I need to do my hair, because usually it falls around that time. So a lot of self-care. So I'll do my hair. I'll take a shower. If I feel like grooming myself, I'll do it. My partners really don't care. Music too. A lot of mindset of Raja's headspace is, you're that bitch. It's the headspace I'm trying to get to in my regular vanilla life as I grow and get older. So it's, you know, that is you're doing it. This is my confident time. So when I get there and then I get to that headspace, that confidence, so all the way to where we're going to meet up, I'm just listening to loud music and just vibing, and I have a whole playlist.
What are some of the other like more practical things that you do? I know
I ask you for meditation things that, what app do you use? What is it?
Headspace a lot.
Headspace. So, a lot of stretching too. I try to prepare, even though when we get to our place of event, I stretch here because too much stretching is never a thing, especially when you're depending on how mobile you are during scenes. You know, stretching is good for the body.
Uh-huh.
The massage gun for like my inner muscles, so like my abductors, and abductors and abductors. They're around the same word, I think.
Those muscles.
Yeah, those muscles. Your walking muscles.
Mm-hmm.
I walk around outside for mobility purposes, just in case. I prepare. I make sure I eat, but I eat something light. Light, but filling.
Mm-hmm.
Water, lots of water the day before and day of.
Okay.
Vitamins, light working out, just stuff to make me feel good for something that is also going to make me feel good.
I think one of the other things that we take into consideration is when you last had some of your shots too, that are going to be more the immunosuppressants.
Oh, yes. So with the medication that I take, I was told that I take the shot every month, but it actually goes out of my system around day 16 between my next shot. But my mother is a wound care nurse. She's been mm-hmm. a wound care. She's been a nurse for since 2018, so 6 years, but she's been in wound care for 13 years, and so she has a lot of patients with the same condition as me.
Also, more things that we consider when we're talking about this is the potential ramifications on your work and on yes. your well-being overall. So, I mean, I'm sure folks sitting here right now are like, Raja, Ember, are you guys crazy? Why do you even do this if this is everything that you're risking?
Because it's something that I love and enjoy. It's something that grounds me. It's something that I can express myself as and find other like-minded people.
But you're also single. You're in a completely different place in your life than the two of us are. And it is the two of us. You are playing with a couple who's not particularly polyamorous.
They are ethically non-monogamous. And I'm here for it. So Ember and Soren are the not personification. They are the physical example of everything I've thought of having as a relationship. And then as I grow as a person, learning from you guys, because you, with you being older, you already went to college, you know, you have higher education. Then, you know, I am at the place of my life. And so you're able to give me things and information and advice that I wouldn't be able to grasp on. Like, I have other adults in my life who are older, but I get a different perspective from you, you know?
Uh-huh. And I think that's another thing that's really helpful is that you do have all of these other strong supportive connections, like with Jay, like with your parent, your mother in particular, your siblings. I think that's something that I've seen as a really important strengths factor when I'm considering the ethics of playing, especially in a S&M and power-based dynamic with you.
I ask for it. I give the question that's always asked is like, what meter are we going? Like, what percentage are we going with? Are we going, you know, like, how much pleasure and how much pain do you want? How much of a mix do you want? What exactly do you want? What exactly do you don't want? Sometimes you can get a clear answer out of me, because I'll be thinking, I read so much. Last year, y'all, I read 140 books.
Damn, girl.
Oh, it was amazing. And all erotica in every genre you can think about.
And you do. Sometimes you come with these ideas. You'll send me erotica snippets. Or sometimes you just say, surprise me. You know what I like at this point, and we go for it.
Yeah.
Now, we've had to, of course, change and adjust, which I think has been at some point really good for our dynamic. And at other times, I feel like I think there's a fear for me of disappointing you sometimes with the changes and the comfort level here. Because you are someone that I care about and that I don't want to see have negative experiences or damaging experiences, especially from something we do together.
Right.
And yet at the same time, I know this craving. I know I'm a sadomasochist myself. I know what it's like to crave that kind of an experience and to not be able to get it. So I'm like empathetic on both sides for there. So it's a weird thing for me.
We're adults and we have health issues.
Lord,
it's so hard. And oh my God, and schedules.
Oh yeah, it can be such a pain.
It is.
And yet, so I think for me, just talking through, I know as a top, there's sometimes a little bit of hesitancy to say, you know, I'm actually afraid to do this for you. And I know we've done this in the past, but given the changes. Right. I mean, I'm big bad Ember. For the love of God, it's not that bad, but by you would think it is if you talk to people in the Ohio. There is that conflict, internal conflict of the change in risk profiling, of going back and reassessing and saying, you know, I know we've done this before, but with this new information or the way things have changed, there's more hesitancy or more caution within that structure. So I think that's also something that I face and that Daddy faces in playing with you. And yet at the same time, we don't want to treat you like a glass doll that needs to be put up on a shelf end.
Right.
Yeah, because you are a human who can make your own decisions for your own self. It's a weird mix to try to help empower you there.
It is. I love and absolutely appreciate how understanding you both are, especially because your example is how much you cancel. And I don't understand. You give the capacity. You give the information so that those can acknowledge that you do not have the capacity to be available all the time when you make plans and that you will cancel, you know? But
usually my big warning is I am flaky.
Mm-hmm. So I knew how understanding you both would be?
I think I'm going to go ahead and address the elephant in the room that I'm sure we hinted at a little bit earlier, but I'm going to go ahead and address what I'm sure, given that you're on the BIPOC panel for Reign of Blood, that folks are really wanting to know. Perspective as a person of color, especially on Sharps, and in playing with non-people of color, what's your experience like with that? Can you describe that?
It goes back to, I think, the reason that those things that happened, like the consent thing at that club with that swinger, when I was touched, or the other things that I didn't even know about that you had intervened in, I think that played a major part in it, if that makes sense, with my partners being non-person color identifying. Possible severe reactions or thoughts from people or messages. I feel like I digressed from the question.
No, you're good. And particularly, I think your inbox and my inbox, because I have photos of you up on my FetLife in particular, and you have some glimpses of me on yours. But I know we've tended to avoid, to avoid putting those photos on your FetLife specifically because it brings in a particular crowd.
Oh, it does. And it makes me so mad. I've grown as a person, and so I'm trying to be better. But some people just make me want to cuss them out. And I'm trying to be better. Okay.
And so I think there are aspects of our relationship that are more complex than if we were of similar skin tones. Just because of the way that people perceive it, either more objectifyingly, more fetishy, you could say.
No. I am, okay, everybody. I'm like, you can look at my profile pictures. I think I have a picture of my face, but I am 5'2". And I have a Coke bottle figure. Do you know how much I get fetishized, but never once have my play partners fetishized me because of my skin tone?
It's one of those things where there are clearly factors and ways that people respond toward you and the way that they respond to you that's different than the way that they respond to me. Yes. Now, obviously, they also respond to me differently because I'm genderqueer. I don't always present very femme. And there's definitely some quirks for sure. So they respond to me differently as well. But there, I do notice and have noticed more of the ways that even within and especially within the kink community, that people are responding differently to you than they necessarily do me.
My last experience in a kink space wasn't... It was great scene wise, but like the surrounding people were not.
And I think it bounces. I watch it bounce back and forth between just kind of this generalized discomfort and maybe not knowing what to say about it. Because it seems like most people are pretty comfortable until the dynamic crosses those lines.
Until they see it in action.
Now, I think part of that has to do with the fact that we do live in the southeastern United States. And so that's perhaps more of a factor than anything else. But I think it does make people uncomfortable. There is, perhaps especially in this area, something a little inherently uncomfortable about that, either from people who feel like it's related to perhaps race play, which it absolutely is not. That's a hard limit for all of us. Yes. And yet at the same time, I have empathy and understanding how it can be triggering.
I don't know what to say because it's such a controversy, you know, especially with because a lot of other people of color, they strictly only date or play with or surround themselves with the same people of color as themselves. And I go based off what kind of people I surround myself with and what kind of people I meet and let into my life. I know that these human beings will never have any malice towards me because of my skin tone.
But I think you bring up a really great point. What I'm hearing you say is that you find this empowering, and you dislike it when other people are telling you that it's not empowering for you.
Oh, yes. I'm a Black woman. I can do what I want. And I will continue to do what I want. This makes me feel good because there's a lot of people of color who are interested or hide this part of themselves. And I hope to motivate someone to try something that they're scared of, you know?
Because I think there are specific barriers, especially when we're talking about Sharps play. There's not a whole lot of representation of people of color within Sharps.
No, there isn't.
In fact, I mean, if we're talking around here, I know very few people of color who are specifically Sharps players.
I don't believe I know any.
And so I think you are doing a lot just being out there and being an example for people to see. There's, I think, a lot of value in just being seen and just being an example for people to say, hey, this can be a thing for me.
It can be. It's possible. I'm unique and I am a person who identifies as color. I am also immunosuppressed. I'm not letting these things stop me from doing what I love and enjoy. And I want others to see that.
And you are one badass bottom altogether. You're a lot of fun to play with. You really can take it a lot. The way that you manage your headspaces, the way that you work through things, the consideration that you give to your risk profile, it's impressive, honestly.
Thank you. I try to be better. And know for sure, especially when it comes to kink, since it's so risky, especially with Sharps. I saw this really beautiful design on social media of a person of color getting like a beautiful butterfly of needles.
Yes, I remember you sending me that one.
Yes. I was like, oh, where did you see this, that? And it had nothing, absolutely nothing to do with kink whatsoever. I think she just saw it.
I think in that aspect, I know I recently released a writing on FetLife where a lot of people have been coming back in the comments and talking about the potential that sharps have for transformation and that more freeing aspect of things. And yeah, I think it has that potential within this arena as well.
I can see it doing a lot.
As I've chatted about with you before, but maybe not the listeners, I also have siblings who are people of color. And I've watched them grow up with a lot of these challenges in their life and this complex relationship to their own skin that I also, to some degree, resonate with, not exactly, of course, but from my experiences as a queer and genderqueer person. I think sharps really helps people feel more comfortable in their skin, explore that skin. As Miss Kitten always says, it's the canvas. It helps you be able to sense things. And so I think there's a lot of chance for folks to find greater connection and healing and understanding of that skin through sharps play.
Definitely. Sharps, I can say that sharps has helped me. I literally just dove in with...
Do you think that needling
is considered sharps, right? I just went head into doing needling.
Yes.
So my dry needling. I do dry needling on my inner thighs for walking. And I just go in there and I get stabbed repeatedly in multiple different points in my legs. And I walk straight out of there. No problem.
Which is literally physically healing for you. And so I think it has this transformational capacity that I've also seen.
Yeah.
I've seen it. There's nothing better than watching you after a sharp scene, especially with knives or something. It's so empowering for you. There's a...
like nothing can stop me.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful experience to be part of.
It is, because especially after we do a scene and we have our really long conversations, then I go home and I sleep and I go through drop, but just I relax all day. I'm fully recharged. I'm grounded. I'm super productive. It's empowering. I'm getting up. I'm stretching. I'm working out. I can just do a whole bunch of things. After I do sharps, especially after sharps, I go really hard after sharps.
That you do for sure. And I think it's one of the greatest joys of my life to be able to give you that experience and to be part of that kind of transformation. I don't know that I've ever seen or had any other bottom who gets just as liberated and free from doing sharps as you do. It's like you are on top of the world when it comes to sharps of any form.
Oh, yeah.
It's an amazing experience.
I love it. It's all I can say is grounding. It's just like something that's a part of me. And even if I didn't do like, and even if we couldn't do like the little baby needles anymore, and you learned how to do needling, that's just as good.
Exactly. Because I know the dry needling has seemed to really do well with your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so with them,
I feel like that's a good starting point for anybody who wants to do sharps, is to do dry needling. It's smaller than an acupuncture needle.
And I've been working on learning a little bit more about it. One, because I'm curious and want to engage in it with my sharps play, but also as a healing technique to use. Yeah, there's just really a lot of potential there, a lot of untapped potential within the Sharps community to be a method of transforming and healing so many areas of pain. Through pain, oddly enough.
Yes. But it's a nice, deep, relaxing feeling after you're done. It's you're just able to just be. Something about just being there and being in the moment, right then and there, and not worrying about anything else. Sometimes you just need that. And I feel like that's also what Sharps does.
So I know early on, one of the first needle scenes that we'd done with you, it was some very early needles. And I know you'd mentioned previously that you had a little bit of a needle phobia to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this one moment. We were in the middle of a needle scene, and we were going to do one particular needle. And then you kind of stopped and looked at us and you said, "I'm really afraid for the moment." Can you talk about that particular moment there? I think that really illustrates some really useful things for folks.
I think it was a really big emotional thing for me, as well as where the needle was going. So it was, 'cause we've only ever done them on my legs. And so we were doing it on my stomach, and I didn't know how that would feel, because I have tried to pierce myself before. And I knew that I got really like sick and nauseous at that time. So I was really scared. And I was also really emotional around that time, because I think it was towards the end of the year. And so I didn't really think much of it. I didn't really hesitate about saying that I was afraid.
And I just remember sitting there and giving you the option, like, "Hey, we can stop and stop right here." And you said, "No, I want to keep going with this." I think when you made that decision and the power was put back into your hands over this fear that you had, and you decided to keep going, and not just to keep going, but how to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I think, a distinct change, I feel like, in the way that you approached kink and the way that you felt confident about yourself following that experience in particular.
It was a very personal change for me. I've making more decisive decisions with kink and in my personal life as well,
which is sometimes tough to say is top. Because it's like, at the same time, I want to balance between not being paternalistic and also saying, "Hey, this is what I'm seeing. Given this information, would you like to continue?" I think that's really how I've chosen to approach it, because I don't want to tell you that you can't, because you're a grown-ass woman who can decide what you want to do. But I still also want to balance that with giving you the information from what I see.
Which allows me to make an informed decision.
And I really like the collaborative consent approach that we've taken to this. It may be more complicated than a lot of folks who are listening would probably approach things, but we're in a really unique situation with it. There are so many potential things that
you've seen, a lot of things that could happen, and and I'm not about that life.
Mm-mm. And yet at the same time, though, it gives back so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think
wherever and however you are, there are ways of engaging in this that are really beneficial if we just think outside the box. Something that I have taken a lot of care to practice is I don't want folks getting away with something with me that I would be uncomfortable with them doing with anyone else. So I think for me, I try to have my play partners model things like bringing their own spotter or meeting in public places, even when we have more of an established dynamic, because I want to normalize taking those precautions and protecting your interests and well-being.
Yes, safety always first. There's a lot of people.
One of those aspects that we always try to practice or at least normalize within my play space is that it is okay to look after your own interests and to involve other people in doing so. I know groups can be a pain to a large degree, but there is something to be said for safety in numbers.
There is.
And
especially with someone in my position too.
Right. Right. And I think normalizing having a safety net there is something that we don't chat about nearly enough either. So let's see. I think last question. Can you give me just a few words that you would use to describe your style of play?
Intense. Artistic. Captivating.
Oh, I like that. I like it. And I would very much agree. It is very intense. And at the same time, easygoing.
It is.
It ramps up and then it's like we're at an intensity and it just is so natural. That flow works so well with you.
It does. I'm killing. It's nothing. It's like we don't have to stop a lot. I mean, like in the beginning of our scenes, it's a lot of, checking in with the stoplight system, but then it just, you learn a person when you're playing with them for long periods,
Yep. And it goes fair and it's a lot of flow. And I know when we've had to take breaks and come back in, there's some reorienting, checking if there's any, especially with your nerve concerns, making sure that you're feeling things. There's no risk of you not noticing an injury, things like that as well. But it tends to go pretty quickly. We get into a groove of things at this point.
That's something I can do something that I can definitely go with the flow with you too. I don't do much of that in my normal life. So it's nice to be able to relinquish that power, but still be in control because I can just end it easy with my safe word. And that's it.
And you're really good at communicating at this point within scenes.
Yes.
You've gotten really good at being able to identify things. You have it down to a pat. You can predict when I'm going to check in, what I'm going to ask, and essentially give me all the information before I've asked it.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay. I'm green.
Exactly. And I'm going to ask you to touch your fingers, make sure that you have sensation there. I'm going to ask you to move your feet. And so I think having those like little smaller rituals is partly really grounding and also very connecting within a scene too.
It is. I like being able to have to become one inside of the scene, if that makes sense. Like, my goal is to become one with myself, to know myself with inside my scene, but to have a connection or a bond enough with my play partners to be one, to have that easy flow and that nice connection.
Which is a absolutely delightful process to go through with you.
It is. I love it.
Well, is there anything else you would like to tell viewers?
This has been an amazing opportunity, and I can't wait to see what else we do with Rain of Blood.
For sure. I know it's a little awkward for both of us to sit down and be recorded while chatting. Yeah, it's more awkward than I anticipated.
I know. Maybe this would have been easier if we were in person.
I don't know. That's a good question. I think it's just that we're accustomed to having so much closeness within our chats that there's like a little bit of discomfort in having people listening in, even if they're not.
That's live. True, but also we never talk over technology like this.
Yeah, no, we always talk in person. Oh, definitely makes it a little on the awkward side, but I've enjoyed it nonetheless. I've enjoyed it too.
Yes.
So if folks wanted to get a hold of you for any reason, how can they do so?
You can reach me on FetLife. I believe my username is Raja, RAJAH 2319. You can never forget it. Yes, I'm a child at heart. Let it go.
And then folks are always welcome to reach out to me as well, and I can put you in touch with her as long as you're not a jerk.
Yeah. I have bodyguards everywhere.
Yes, you do. And you deserve it because you're a fabulous human.
Thank you.
Well, with that being said, we'll go ahead and stop the recording now, and we'll chat with everyone soon.